BetRivers Sportsbook is offering new customers a deposit match up to $250 when you sign up today. In addition to their welcome bonus, BetRivers has daily and ongoing promotions that can provide extra value. Download the BetRivers app or go to BetRivers.com today to sign up. Presented by Rivers Casino Pittsburgh. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. After a week off, Madden Monday returns. Tim Benz and Mark Madden from 105.9 The X. You can read them four times a week at Trib Live as well. The award-winning Madden Monday podcast. Glad you're back with us. And a lot has happened since we took the week off, at least based on what I was able to glean listening to Mark's show and following Twitter conversations with the Pittsburgh sports world as I was hopping all over the East Coast. Mark, I'm trying to figure out, or at least I was trying to figure out while I was gone, who got thrown under the bus more? Kevin Colbert by Ben Roethlisberger or Mark Whipple by Pat Narduzzi?
Well, I didn't make anything bad out of the revelation by Ben Roethlisberger that he thinks Colbert wanted him out and Tomlin was ambivalent and Art Rooney wanted him to play. All this applying to last season. I was more interested that Ben thinks he could still be playing when I think 80% of what happened last season, Ben's final season, indicates he shouldn't have even played then. He was pretty bad except for the fourth quarter, but then again, he won six games with fourth quarter comebacks and another in overtime, so you can't discount that aura. But I always knew that one wanted Ben out, one was ambivalent, one wanted him to stay. I had a hunch it was Colbert, Tomlin, and Rooney in that order, but didn't know for sure. So now we just know for sure what we already kind of knew. I don't think that Ben, you know, said that Colbert's mother wore army boots, nor did Colbert act untoward in thinking Ben shouldn't play last season. That's what general managers do. They evaluate. So that stuff didn't throw me for a loop at all. The stuff with Narduzzi and Whipple showed what, again, just what a horse's ass Narduzzi is. Because Whipple did a great job putting that offense together and executing the game plan. And they finished, what, fourth in the country in scoring average. And Pickett was a Heisman Trophy finalist. And Addison was the Biletnikoff Award winner. I don't know how you say that you've gotten better guys in the position of offensive coordinator. And Brennan Marion, the wide receivers coach, he threw him under the bus too. I think that Mark Whipple was more responsible for Pitt's success last year than Pat Narduzzi was. Where that comes from, whether it's jealousy that Whipple got the credit he did, or anger because Whipple left. And to my understanding, Whipple mostly left because he couldn't stand working with Narduzzi. So I just thought Narduzzi came up as terribly petty. Tom Petty. And Narduzzi's one of those guys, the more big time he gets, the more small time he acts.
And I think there's sort of a small time element that goes along with his reaction to Mark. I mean, he just seems so chapped, so burned, that Canada went to LSU and Whipple ended up going to, what, Nebraska. Those are bigger programs, and he just doesn't see Pitt as being a lesser program than Nebraska or LSU, but the people who took the job certainly do.
Well, he's wrong. Pitt is the lesser program. I was saying that specifically, the never-ending comparison between Pitt and Penn State. I think Pitt had a marginally better team this past year. I think if the teams play and it's at Penn State has a good chance to win. Pitt probably wins at Pitt. But the bottom line is Pitt may have had a better team this past year, but Penn State still has a better program. And there's a difference between better team 1 year, better program, period. So I think that, Narduzzi was just out of line. I used to go to Pitt games, Tim, three or four times a year. I followed the program very closely. The minute he took over and I figured out what kind of a guy he was and the things he said and the way he did frequently throw people under the bus, I just stopped following Pitt, and I won't again until he's gone.
Do you really think Art wanted Ben to play for football reasons, or did Art just want what they ended up getting, which was the swan song farewell after a win against the Browns at Heinz Field?
I think he wanted to play, period. I think if Art had his way, Ben might still be playing. But I don't think he's as convinced as he was last year. I don't think Art – there's no way to anticipate the swan song Ben had. So no, I don't think Art had it pegged.
Well, all right, let me phrase that a little bit differently. Did he just want to avoid having a rough exit with Ben then?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think they've had kind of a rough exit anyway.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because now Ben has prevented that from happening, you know?
Yeah, Ben was always going to think he should keep playing. Okay, whenever Ben retired, Ben could have played till he was 53 and gone 0-17 his last season, and he would have still thought he should play the next year. So the rough ending, I mean, to what degree, it was rough, but it was never going to be totally avoided.
He talks about his arm still feeling pretty good, but, you know, we can debate what his arm strength was by the end of his last season. I don't think that's what people think of as a reason why he couldn't keep playing. It's not the arm. It's the lack of mobility to the degree that they couldn't scheme 60% of what Matt Canada wanted to do.
I'll be blunt, Tim. I think there are no shortage of reasons why Ben shouldn't have played. Now, as far as the Canada offense being shortchanged by Ben's lack of mobility and whatnot, we'll see, won't we? I mean, I expect some revolutionary things from that offense, because now there's nothing holding back its full execution, correct?
Exactly, which is part of the reason why I'm really interested to see how they handle the quarterbacks, not so much from the standpoint of drama like a quarterback competition. I think it's going to be Trubisky. I'm nearly convinced it's going to be Trubisky unless he really stinks and blows
it. Oh, Tim, I'm convinced past that. Pickett's going to be the third string guy to open the season and be inactive on game days. I have no doubt about that. That was the plan for Ben in 04 till Batch and Maddox got hurt.
Do they take advantage of this being Pickett's first camp? Do they take advantage of now what they perceive to be a starter that they have picked to give Pickett lots of time in the preseason? I mean, like, I'm curious as to how much then they avoid any sort of perceived quarterback contest if Pickett were to play well and at least outperform Mason Rudolph to make himself the number two.
It doesn't matter at all. At the beginning of the season, it will be Trubisky 1, Rudolph 2, Pickett 3, no matter what. And I don't think Pickett's going to get all that many snaps or that much game time in the preseason.
Even if there's a team or two out there that gets a quarterback injured that might be interested in trading a pick for Rudolph?
I don't think they're interested in trading Rudolph. I think they see Rudolph as the number two.
Wow. That really pulls the plug on any...
Oh, Tim, I disagree with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I said when they drafted Pickett, if they're drafting Pickett, he should start. And if since I knew they wouldn't, I don't think he should have been drafted. But I have no, I mean, I disagree with all of it, but I could see it all coming too.
That's exactly what I wrote in the Trib a couple weeks ago, which is, you know, we can still say it's a good pick that they got Kenny Pickett, that, you know, they took a franchise quarterback that when they had the opportunity to do so, if that was their opinion. But stop with the whole he's the most cable-ready quarterback in the draft routine then, if you're just going
to
incubate
him. Which was the
him.
Only reason to take him. The only reason to take him because he was could play right away.
It really does render moot a lot of the rationale for why you did what you did.
Yeah, it sucks is what it does. I mean, it was, again, the contradictory nature of the whole thing. If you're going to draft him, play him. If you're not going to play him, don't draft him. And they drafted him and they're not going to play him.
Can they put the genie back in the bottle when it comes to, you know, the magic and aura of Latrobe and St. Vincent and all that? They used to wallow in that so much. Can that really wash with the players now that they've had training camp for 2 years at Heinz Field?
Is Sharky's open?
Because the writers will write it that way? Is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, Sharky's, although I hear about Dino's. I haven't been to Dino's in, I can't remember the last time. I've been doing my show from Sharky's on Tuesday the 2nd from 3 till 6, but yeah, I mean, I think the magic is in the fans and the way they go there with their coolers and their lawn chairs. I think that's where the magic lies. I don't think the players really much figure into it.
You're probably right about that. I just want to – they seem to play along, the players did, before there was ever a break in it. And now that they've had a two-year break, I wonder if there's going to be some grousing over how it is.
There will be, but I don't think that's up to them either.
There's a lack of position battle. So really kind of, I think, glaring
there's
lack
– one.
Yeah, there's the guard.
Left guard.
Aside from that, there's a glaring lack of position battles for a team, Mark, that's very much in the playoff bubble. Shouldn't they have more position battles?
You have to have resources to have position battles. You know, like, for example, I would love to see a position battle between Alex Highsmith and somebody, because I just don't think Alex Highsmith is that good. Unfortunately, there's no one to battle him.
or Chukwuma Okorafor and Dan Moore and a third guy, or, you know, a better corner than Akella Witherspoon or Levi Wallace.
Better safety than Terrell Edmonds, although I think he's actually one of the lesser of their problems on defense.
Yeah, I think he's a known commodity. You know what you're going to get. He is what he is.
Plays okay alongside Minka, too.
Yeah, he does kind of do the caddy thing that Ryan Clark did for Troy Polamalu. There's an element of that there.
Yes, and ain't nothing wrong with that, although I still don't think with their inside linebackers being as weak as they are that Minka is going to have the freedom to roam. I think he's still going to play like an inside backer on a lot of downs.
Mark, we haven't spoken for a week since the Penguins situation developed and Mike Matheson went and Petrie's there. Now that you've got some distance on it, what do you think about what the Penguins did?
Oh, I think Petrie's a real good defenseman. You know, he's 35, but I think he's really good. And I think that, you know, you're going to get a situation where him and Letang don't quite alternate, but I think each one will play like, 22, 23 minutes a game. They'll just, you know, use those two and, boy, I'm freezing on the guy from Tampa, Tim. Help me out.
Oh, Ruda. Jan Ruda.
Yeah, Ruda. I mean, you know, I wonder if they're going to be tempted to play him on his offside, which he can't do, to partner with Petrie and, you know, give a true top four feel to it. But I wouldn't do that. I'd stick with the lefty-righty because that's what you've always been sold on if you're Mike Sullivan. But I think it's a pretty decent defensive core, especially on the right side. You're going to gamble with POJ and potentially Ty Smith, depending on how it shakes down. But I think that's good. I mean, I think they use the same defensemen who have never won a playoff round, or, well, never is a long time, but dating back to 2018 anyway. I think it's time for a change.
Can they still play with the speed that Sullivan wants to play?
Well, no, but they're going to try.
I was wondering if there's an element, especially with Matheson, of taking away the toys from Sullivan and making him change his approach.
No, that's not at all the approach. Petrie's pretty active, too. He can activate as well, and he will.
Do you think they tried to get rid of Pettersson and just didn't find a taker and decided to make the move with Matheson instead?
Do I think? I know. and Hextall didn't want to trade Matheson because that was the only deal Montreal would make. I still think they need to get rid of Pettersson, although that carries a bad context. I think Pettersson's a good NHL defenseman. I think he's a top four with the roster as currently assembled, but he's overpaid, you know, at $4.025 million, I think. And I would rather gamble with POJ and Ty Smith playing behind Dumoulin.
Did they stagnate? Did they improve? Or did they backslide, the Penguins, do you think?
They improved marginally. I mean, I still think they're in trouble in the bottom six at wing. Mm-hmm. You know, it still worries me they're going to, you know, recycle Josh Archibald instead of ever giving Drew O'Connor a chance. But, you know, I think the team's marginally better than last season. I think it's a definite playoff team.
Is it definite because nobody else closed the gap from 9 to 8?
Ottawa closed the gap a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think New Jersey's probably going to wind up having closed the gap a little bit. Columbus, too. But I feel like the Penguins are a definite playoff team. Now, when you talk about can they win a round, I think that's up to the core performing better. People talk about the goaltending issues, in particular the last two playoff eliminations. But again, and I think I've said this on the podcast, I just laugh that we talk about how bad Jari was against the Islanders 2 years ago, and then, boy, if only Jari could have played this past year. It's the same guy. Make up your mind. You can't use the same guy for two diametrically opposed excuses. Instead, you should just conclude that what could have happened did, which is the biggest sports truism of all time, and hope that Jari plays better this year. But I still think the biggest factor is that the guys in the core aren't taking over playoff series. I don't think any one of them has had a truly outstanding playoff series since Sid in the 17 final against Nashville, although I do think Sid was on his way to having that kind of series against the Rangers before he got bopped in the head by Trouba.
You know who else Pittsburgh fans apply that two-way mentality to? It's Matt Canada, or maybe better said, it's Mitch Trubisky, because we love to say, well, Mitch Trubisky got ruined in Chicago because he had bad coaching, and then he's going to be coached by Matt Canada, and we've done nothing but rip Matt Canada since he got the job as offensive coordinator. So which one is it? He's the same guy there, too.
Well, we're not allowed to blame Tomlin.
That's for sure. Right, exactly.
Okay, and no matter how the Steelers do, Trubisky's going to get blamed. And I think he'll do well. I think the defense is going to soil the bed. but won't get blamed because, hey, Steeler defense, Steel Curtin, Mean Joe Green, blah, blah, blah. Tim, this defense has three great players on it. It has more really bad players on it.
Interesting you bring that up because I looked at the ESPN.com list that they put out because that's what you do in July. You do nothing but lists. And they took every team in the NFL and said, this is their best unit. And they admitted when they wrote about the Steelers, we're cheating with this, but they said pass rusher because you got Hayward and you got Watt. But it's one defensive lineman, it's one outside linebacker, and then like you said, the third really good guy is Minkah Fitzpatrick. Aside from that, everybody else is at best case above average.
Tim, who's above average?
Ogunjobi's above average.
In this context, I don't think there's one other player on the defense besides the big three, besides Watt, Hayward, and Minkah, that is for sure going to have an above-average season.
For sure, no. I would give above-average potential to at least Ogunjobi and Miles Jack.
Yeah, and I think you know what you're going to get with Alu-Alu.
Yeah, he's above-average.
Well, no, he's not. He's average. He's a good average, but he's average.
What would you say about Edmonds? Does he fall below average then?
Average. I mean, what's it say about Cam Sutton when every cornerback who started outside has faded out of the picture and he's still going to be the nickel?
I think they should have known that when they decided to extend him because that's always what he was good at.
Well, maybe they did because having a good nickel's valuable. I remember once in a while, Tim, when they'd always talk about moving to Shay Thompson outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always wind up moving him back to nickel, moving him back inside because that's what he's good at. There's nothing wrong with being good at that because – what was it? The Steelers were in sub packages last year on defense, if I'm not mistaken, 70-something percent of the time, right?
That's why there is an element of truth to what ESPN.com said about pass rushing being their strongest attribute because they are in sub, and Hayward and Watt do get after the quarterback. But with T.J. Watt either going out or being injured as often as he has been, you need something better than just Alex Highsmith on the other side, and they don't have it right now.
You made me predict him. I would say T.J. Watt will miss significant time this year because it's just due to happen. You know, his brother's body broke down at about this stage in his career. It's going to happen with T.J. as well. You watch.
You know what else I'm worried about in that context, too, is Najee Harris. I mean, 381 touches without significant injury. That's like, you know, beating the house all the time in Vegas. I don't know how they got away with that. They're not going to get away with that again this year.
Well, I liked what he said recently about the 500 touches. If it took 500 touches to win, he would do it. And I said to myself, boy, Najee, you care about them a lot more than they care about you.
Mark, it looks like the deconstruction of the Pirates has begun. Daniel Vogelbach is now a Met. Quintana, I'm sure, will be the next to go. What'd you make of their draft, by the way? That jumped out to me how quickly everybody's talking about the next shortstop before O'Neill Cruz is even done with his first season.
Well, that tells me one of two things will happen, that O'Neill Cruz won't be playing shortstop much longer, and that him and, what's the guy's name, Tamar Johnson, they'll never play on the same team.
No, they won't, because this isn't about him displacing Cruz. This is about him being the next hype machine being ready to replace Cruz.
Tim, did you know that O'Neill Cruz has struck out as many times this season already as Barry Bonds did in all of 2004?
Yeah, but how was his bat speed when he was striking out, though, Mark? I'm sure it was stunning.
Well, Barry's bat speed wasn't much when he walked. I think it was 232 times. It amazes me that the yokels, the marks write off the importance of Cruz not walking. That dumbfounds me because they want him to be good, and they will rate him as good no matter how bad he is.
It's willing dismissal of their own evidence that they used to advance for what was an important stat, and now they're tamping it down. And they're also propping up the exit velocity stuff to the point that they're making it completely meaningless if it wasn't before.
Well, there are certain athletes in Pittsburgh, and I suspect it's like this in every city, but the fans decide they like them, and then they evaluate what they do with the eye toward thinking they're good. Like with O'Neill Cruz, they evaluate all the miles per hour stuff, even though that doesn't mean bupkis. Minkah Fitzpatrick's like that too. Minkah Fitzpatrick was very average last year. And some say that's because the scheme that he had to, you know, dumb down his game because the, you know, for example, the inside backers weren't very good, but he still, you know, went from first team all pro to first team all pro to not making any all pro. But people say, oh, no, that's not Minka's fault. He was great, blah, blah, blah. He wasn't great. He just wasn't. But they want him to be great.
Perfect example of what you're talking about is O'Neill Cruz hits this home run today off of a 99-mile-an-hour pitch, and all the stat geeks are going crazy because it's the second fastest home run ever hit against a pitch of that velocity. And the guy who hit the fastest pitch on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball was Jordan Luplo. So, like, if he's number one, how important is that stat really then?
Well, why do I care about that? I mean,
right.
Do they get extra points for it? Did they get a victory? I mean, like, it just doesn't matter. That stuff doesn't matter at all, even a little bit. I'd rather he hit three home runs off the slowest pitches ever.
Mark, I was in Lake Placid again for the second summer in a row, and I walked away with what now I deem to be a very prized possession. I know you talked about your Clemente memorabilia. I got a Mike Arruzzioni shot glass. And the picture on the shot glass is the shot that Arruzzioni took to beat the Russians. It's a shot of the shot every time I take a shot. How am I not going to buy that?
Yeah, Tim, try selling that for $500 like I just did my Clemente autograph hat.
$500? Is that what you got for it?
Yeah, yeah. I got offered that because somebody heard me talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
And I called a memorabilia dealer just to make sure I wasn't ripping myself off. But he said it's actually a pretty good price. Because don't forget, it's not a game-worn hat. It's a 1971 fan hat. Like, gold hat, black brim. And it's autographed on the brim by Clemente and Dave Justy, who was their closer back then. And, you know, when you have a double autograph and the one autograph's lesser, it devalues it.
Got it. So if it had just been Clemente, you could have gotten a grand, maybe?
Would have been Clemente. I probably could have got, like, $1,200 for it. I got to add, though... I have like 10 signed photos of Clemente, you know, just Clemente, that they're worth like $1,400 each probably.
$1,400 a piece. So you're going to sell them all at once? You're going to kind of piecemeal them out?
Well, I don't know what I'm going to sell. I have one autograph. I wrote to Clemente as a kid, and he sent me a picture back that's personalized to me. Actually sent me a baseball card poster back, so I'll keep that. But the other stuff, I have baseball signed by Clemente too, although none with just Clemente.
Mark, we won the bronze medal for the Madden Monday podcast from, let me see if I've got this here, the North American Digital Media Awards. Is that sort of like the exit velocity equivalent of podcasting?
That's the, I don't give a rat's ass about none of that equivalent of podcasting.
I just want to know who won gold and silver and what they did to be better than us. That's all I care about.
Yeah, I'm not going to investigate that. I'm a lot closer to the end than the middle. I don't care. Just
get as much for the Clemente merchandise as you can and go off and see as many UFO concerts as possible.
Well, UFO, I think, what day is today? I think their last concert is like, it was this weekend in Greece, but they say it's their last concert. I'm not sure I quite believe it.
Mark Madden, he will be on Monday through Friday on 105.9 The X. You can listen to him there 3 until 6. I will be on with Mark for Madden Benz Unfiltered. That will be Monday at 9:30. If you're listening to this on Monday morning, you can catch that on the Facebook stream each and every Monday via Trib Live. This is the Madden Monday podcast, and it's brought to you by Bet Rivers.